in the altcoin season, if you are not searching for crypto gems on KuCoin, you're doing it wrong. As the home of altcoins, KuCoin is offering over 600 tradable coins. Whether you are a beginner or professional trader, you can always find a good product fit on KuCoin, ranging from earning products with passive income to derivatives trading with up to 100 times leverage. Sign up today to find the next crypto gem in DeFi, GameFi, NFT, and Metaverse. Join us with 10 million global investors and claim your $500 welcome bonus now. Welcome to KuCoin. It's KuCoin. Sign up to get a 500 USDT welcome bonus.
Welcome to the CoinGecko podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Young. Each week, we'll be interviewing someone from the blockchain industry to learn more about this fast-moving cryptocurrency economy. If this is your first time listening, then thanks for coming. The CoinGecko podcast is produced each week to help you stay ahead of the curve. Show notes can be found at podcast.coingecko.com. I highly encourage you to join our newsletter where we send out top news in the crypto industry every Monday to Friday. Come back often and feel free to add the podcast to your favorite RSS feed or iTunes. You can also follow us on Twitter and Telegram at CoinGecko.
Hello, everyone. My name is Ben, and as usual, I am your host for today's podcast. Today, we have a very special guest. His name is Philippe Bekazi, the CEO and founder of XBTO. Welcome to the podcast, Philippe.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, great to have you here. So, without further ado, let's get things started. Tell us a little bit about yourself, before founding XBTO, and what led your move into crypto?
So 20 years ago, I started my career in a hedge fund trading global macro derivatives. It gave me a perspective on sort of global events and how things were sort of traded around the world in different ways. And I spent about 4 years doing just that, being in front of screens and then looking at everything from that angle, meaning from a computer screen angle. It was very enlightening because it was the first job that I had, and I had a pretty strong sort of math background, and I really enjoyed the finance and the math behind trading. And so I spent a decent amount of time just focusing on like algorithms and trading systems and figuring out ways to generate what we call alpha. Is basically how do you make market over and beyond sort of the benchmarks, right? The S&Ps and et cetera, et cetera. Then I advised banks around the world. I started traveling. So I went from the screen to actually looking at the world and traveling and figuring out what was I actually trading, Australian bonds, Kiwi bonds, Brazilian interest rates, this kind of thing I only had seen from screens. And then, the financial crisis, got into reading about Bitcoin fairly early in 2010, started tinkering around on computers in 2011, doing some little bit of mining. And then I was like, hey, how can I sort of participate in this ecosystem? And basically I took from, my past experiences, and what I like to do was just kind of design systems to take advantage of sort of the market. And in 2015, I created XBTO in 2015 and with two other gentlemen. And from then on, it was, our core was market making and liquidity provisioning and sort of basically trading, prop trading. And then we went into VC, venture capital, mining, and now we're doing some asset management for other people's money, which was historically not the case. So we've been more, in recent years, we had been more like inward facing, now we're more outward facing. As you may have noticed with our Inner Miami sponsorship recently, and we're quite prominent in a lot of the sort of blockchain events and Bitcoin events, especially this year at Bitcoin 2022, for example.
So clearly your business model has evolved, right? I mean, you kind of shared how you evolved from market making to more venture-like portfolio management services. How would you say the ratio of your work is right now in terms of, how much of your business revenue turnover comes from market making services compared to the other forms of services?
Right. It's a great question. And it depends on the years and depends on the sort of the exits that we may have on our venture capital portfolio. I would say that from a consistency perspective, we would expect our market making and trading to be more significant. But again, it depends on the years. And sometimes, you know, our venture portfolio does extremely well and outpaces what we do on our liquidity provisioning, which is more of a kind of slowly but steady kind of grind in a way. And then you have the sort of giant upside of VC, which is pretty typical, right? Where, you know, it depending on who you are, yeah. Usually in VC, you try to buy 5 to 10% of your companies actually do well. So if you're lucky.
This got me a bit curious. What is the institutional demand like for your market making services? I've kind of zoned in into this, particularly because, you know, it's your primary product, at least your initial product. And I'm curious, do you have any interesting facts or statistics that you can share?
I would say that it remains very strong. In bear markets, it's less strong, of course. It's just because no one has any... No one's creating any new projects. Everybody's trying to survive. No one wants to spend any money. And of course, for us, you know, we get involved as, you know, that there is an expectation that, you know, we make some money, right? So when we're selling our services. So we sell to exchanges and we sell to token issuers that need liquidity provisioning services. I think... we've been growing quite aggressively this year. I think I think we'll be on par to grow about 100% in terms of the way we are serving our customers. The amount of customers that we'll be serving probably be in the range of about 100% growth. Yeah,
like you mentioned, investment portfolio side has grown quite significantly. It's kind of like a core product as well now. Could you share a little bit about your investment thesis at XBTO?
Yeah. So we have the initial fund with the corporate venture fund, which was our own money. And we invest in companies where we kind of needed that infrastructure to do our own business. Like, for example, we made an investment in a company called Deribit, which is nowadays the leading crypto options provider in the world, right? Back in the day, there was no real easy way to have non-linear instruments for hedging. And we thought that was going to be a big thing. So we got involved with Deribit very early. I think it might have been, we had our first discussions in maybe late 2016 to early 2017. And then we went in as like a strategic saying, hey, we'll help you make markets because, you know, it's very difficult to make there. It's very specialized liquidity provisioning when you make marketing on non-linear products, which are options. There are not that many people that can do it. And you need a crypto native to be able to do it. And so we were a perfect fit. So that was one, but like you, when you think about accounting and taxes and payments and there's so many of these where we thought, that makes so much sense. And this is something that's going to be required in the future. We should be investing in supporting these companies. That's how we really look at the world, at least from the venture fund, the corporate venture fund. Now, the new Humla fund, which is a fund that accepts other people's money, that one is a little less strategic. It still takes on a lot of that sort of thesis from the original fund, of course, because you know we influence a lot of the decision making process there, even though it's actually run by a separate individual. That one is a sort of blockchain specific fund. Invests in things that can be sort of broader and doesn't touch us directly, but it can be like in things that could potentially be blockchain, could potentially be fintech. It's a little bit more sort of forward-looking, like, you know, big themes like India, Africa, How do we digitize these yep. worlds, these places? That's basically the main sort of the driving thesis behind these VC funds.
And no, you share a lot. And one thing I would like to ask is, from the feeling I get, XPO is quite focused on infrastructure kind of led products, and they're more like the low key slash underrated ones. It's not the super, you know, like all the hype right now, like GameFi and I think is something like that. It's more fundamental infrastructure, data architecture, that kind of thing. And in your opinion, what is an extremely underrated piece of market infrastructure or product that you believe is lacking the space, but very much needed?
Well, oddly enough, and we talk about decentralization, and so it's where we want to tend towards, right? Being as mm-hmm. decentralized and robust as possible. But ironically enough, what is kind of required right now for the trading community to have more efficient use of capital is some kind of prime broker for crypto native players. Right, the ability to trade on one exchange versus another exchange by using a centralized pool of capital that's doing the margining between the two. Because otherwise, you have to have some collateral here, you have to have some collateral there, yep. and you have to manage those two collateral instead of having to use that centralized pool of capital. So I think that's underrated. I think that's coming. I think it's a lot of work, but it's certainly coming.
That's very interesting. Do you think it will be a centralized party, or maybe it might be a decentralized product where people automate it through smart contracts?
Yeah, again, and this is something that we invested in early on, and it's actually going quite well, even though it is a long, it's a long journey to get it really going a full steam. Is a company like X Margin, which kind of tries to do zero knowledge proof margining so that people can't really know, they don't have to give up their positions to yep. tell other people what they're worth or what their risk is on their portfolio, right? So it's yep. it's sort of a walled garden of positions that is fed to a sort of, it's centralized but decentralized in the sense that it's
cool.
You don't have to trust it because it compute a number for your counterparties to know what risk you hold. So that's really interesting. There's no conflicts of interest there, and eventually it could be completely decentralized through a blockchain. But right now, sometimes you need to do it centralized because there's yep. so much technology involved, and then you kind of decentralize yep. it when you've figured it out. Really interesting stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite natural nowadays. A lot of people expect decentralization off the top, but I think most projects are doing progressive decentralization, and I assume that's what X Margin is doing.
Yeah, basically.
Yep. Okay, so this is kind of a off-the-cuff, kind of weird question. And one thing I've noticed about XPTO is that a lot of the team members have strong TradFi backgrounds. And even yourself, right, coming from TradFi, but obviously you're also a Bitcoin OG. But my question is this, how has this helped with XPTO's edge? And has it ever worked against you? Because crypto is renowned for being full of degens, and this might affect your way of thinking.
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's one that we battle with all the time. It's that, are we next gen or are we old school? You serve different people and different institutions by being one or the other, right? You're going too far here, you're really into the crypto native degen crowd, and that's who you're serving. If you go here, you're more institutional in the way you look and maybe potentially more trustworthy. So it's about this balance between the two. So I started my career about 20 years ago, and I've been crypto basically 10 years. So I'm basically exactly, I'm 10 and 10. Like, I've got 10 years of TradFi, 10 years of crypto, and I feel pretty much balanced in the way I look at the world. you know, I do believe in the promise of blockchain decentralization. We see it today in many ways, how much value can be created by sort of decentralizing money. You know, money is being used as a weapon. And that's, you know, that's a philosophy, I guess. It's something that you can subscribe to if you want. But I don't think necessarily it should be the case. I don't think it should be the case because a lot of people are being excluded, right or wrong, from this, from the current system, because of collateral damage, not because they're necessarily good or bad. They're just not able to participate because the cost of that system is so high in terms of burden of compliance and operational. So an operational burden. And so, you know, blockchain is really, when you think about it, very sort of open to everyone, right? It democratizes finance very much so.
I think it's very interesting at the reset because, you know, there's been a lot of discussions lately about intrinsic human rights, like the right to transact. And it's clear from the way the world has been operating lately, you know, with the war in Russia, the exclusion from SWIFT accounts and all that, it's really coming down to, does this right actually exist and should it be protected? I think for a lot of crypto natives, the answer is yes. And I guess more and more people will start realizing or maybe opening their eyes that, oh yeah, actually it is very important, even especially for the ones who, like you said, are collateral damage.
Yeah, look, at some level, you know, you're trusting a system that's centralized, that has its own objectives and agenda, mm-hmm. and you know, it's, sometimes it's hard to know right from wrong. I mean, mm-hmm. in this case, it seems pretty clear, but a lot of times it's in the gray, right? You don't really know whether. And so, you know, having a system that's completely impartial, apolitical, is critical in the long term.
And you know, with that being said, has the recent events like war, inflation concerns, and fears about a global recession impacted your portfolio in terms of valuations or deal making? You know, whether in the broader crypto or fintech environment as well?
Well, believe it or not, not so much. We have very little exposure to equities, mm-hmm. Very little exposure to you know, Russia and Ukraine and those that region. So generally, I think, and Bitcoin has actually done fairly well considering it's down from its highs, but not because of the current geopolitical issues that we're facing. It's just simply because, you know, cycles. Bitcoin goes up a lot and then it comes down a lot. We're still up massively from November 2020. And, you know, I think Bitcoin will continue to do well in the years to come. Look, you threw a pandemic at it, you threw a war at it. Bitcoin still is, you know, quite resilient in the grand scheme of things. So our portfolio has been pretty good. I think volumes have come down a little bit. I think that's typical in a bear market. People kind of lose interest. You know, there's been, you know, there's been a lot of FOMO on NFTs and the usual on certain tokens and that kind of that kind of comes down and people calm down. They're like, yeah, actually, in retrospect, maybe it wasn't a great idea, or you know, to be paying so much for some, you know, some NFT. I'm not going to call it JPEG. Some people are going to go crazy, but you know, it kind of looks that way a lot now these days. So it's like, you know, I think in the grand scheme of things, crypto is actually doing well. And I think we'll see in a rising Fed environment, raising rate environment, it'll be the true test to see if Bitcoin, especially, which is the bellwether, remains steady or even strong.
On that note, because since your company also deals with mining and staking services. I'm just curious about how do you have any insights that you can share about the mining demand, the mining network? How is it like? You know, with all this war concerns and anything, do you actually see, oh, I want to be a miner now, you know, because it might be a sense of job security.
Well, mining has been on an upward path for sure. I mean, if you look at the difficulty rate, the hash rate, keep hitting new highs. People are installing more and more mining rigs, whether more on the ASIC side than the GPU side, of course, because of Ethereum's uncertainty. But, you know, we have been financing miners, equipment, and we see a lot of demand for it. And so I think this is something that will keep going. Now, you know, whether certain geographies will be more bullish than others, probably. You know, some geographies had absolutely no mining, and for because of government regulations or because the electricity is just so high, maybe. And others are, you know, the U.S. is still growing quite a bit, and that's a good thing because on the back of a China that was basically shut down completely, it was good to see that, you know, the world just taking, you know, other parts of the world taking the pace from, and so that shows a lot of robustness for Bitcoin, and that basically I think brings a lot of reassurance and certainty to the people who are like, mining, it's all Chinese, and now, you know, in basically a month, you know, well, no, there's no Chinese mining anymore, and look, Bitcoin's still here. So it was really interesting as a stress test to see that happen, and I think that's a really good thing for Bitcoin.
Absolutely agree. But I guess now the other concern might be, oh, and now it's all American.
Well, it always swings the other way, right? Yeah. The pendulum always swings the other way. But I think Canada has quite a bit, and Latin America has quite a bit. You know, some geographies are more visible in the news than others, but you know, there are countries we can't spell that have immense amounts of mining, and we just don't hear too much about them. So I think it's a worldwide thing. Yeah, we hear a lot about the U.S. investing a lot, but also the U.S. has immense amount of capital, and it's certain. It's one of the safest geographies, so it kind of makes sense that the U.S. would end up being a large part of the network.
I completely agree. Just so you know, I think Malaysia is also highly underrated. Our mining network is pretty high up there too. If I'm not mistaken, top 10 at least.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. You know, let's move on to the next topic, right? We keep hearing about, oh, the institutions are coming. And in your experience at Expedio, you obviously deal with a lot of these institutions. My question is, could you lend some perspective on this? Is this true? And if so, to what extent are they already here?
You know, we keep talking about it. I think the institutions are here. They've been here for a little while. The question is, what kind of institution has been more prevalent than others? Sort of the banks are starting to tiptoe a little bit into Bitcoin, and they'll start with Bitcoin, then they'll eventually get into Ethereum and the rest. But hedge funds, I think, are here to a certain degree. They are. We've seen it with Paul Tudor Jones and other hedge fund investors. They have a Bitcoin position. It may be a small position today. It'll probably be a growing position. And then there's other institutions that, for regulatory reason, probably just cannot make that leap so quickly. You know, it's when you're a JP Morgan, you're a Citibank, it's not the same as being a small regional bank where, you know, you have less stakeholders, you can do things maybe more differently, and you're trying to differentiate yourself from the others. You know, pension funds are also usually typically quite slow to move. And so, you know, they prefer to go through the regulated products. And those regulated products may or may not be adequate as a proxy for the space. Like investing in a miner, for example, that's listed on the stock exchange gives you a little bit of an exposure on the space. But is it a great exposure? I would think not, given the multiples. At least historically, that was not the case. You know, multiples have come down a bit. But and, you know, again, this is not advice of any kind. But I think generally it's the institutions are rolling in slowly. But what is clear to me is that it is going the right way, right? It's going up and to the right. And that's what you want to see. Whether the slope or the speed, the velocity of that that trend is high, it's never as high as we would like. But look, in 10 years' time, you will be surprised at how many institutions will have exposure to the space, and DeFi will have probably permeated quite a bit of the sort of portfolios of these companies. You know, we see it, of course, at XBTO. We have a lot of talks with various players, big or small. The small are more nimble. They're more willing to take a risk. The big are, you know, they have to go through all kinds of units, their compliance, their BAU, this and that. And so, but, you know, we keep, you know, we keep them close and we continue educating them. And, you know, I think that's sort of critical is to make sure that they understand what's going on in the space and can make an educated decision and, you know, and bring it to their stakeholders, right? Because it's never one person, those big institutions, that don't make a decision unless it's, you know, potentially like Fidelity. That's exactly the case. It's that it's basically one person that calls the shots, and it's like, oh, I love crypto. And, you know, she's been in crypto for a long time. Fidelity's been incredibly in crypto for a long time. And so, but that's, you know, that's kind of rare.
It's interesting because I just remembered that, I think it was just today or yesterday, that HSBC just entered the metaverse in Sandbox, which is quite funny because I found that they were the ones closing people's accounts with dealing crypto. But yeah, I mean, they entered the Sandbox. So just thought I'd share.
Yeah, I mean, Carrefour also joined the Sandbox. There are a few companies that did.
Yeah, there are quite a few. I just found it ironic that it was HSBC.
I think for them, they're looking at it as more advertising than
actually. Yeah, it's a marketing play.
It's a marketing play more than anything else. You know, I think if you still go to an HSBC branch and you say you want to trade crypto, they're probably going to be like, no.
I agree.
Right.
Okay. So one thing that we usually don't talk about is, you know, after the institutions coming, yes, we want them here. But the other question is the ecosystem ready to accept them? You know, these are big boys. They have a lot of needs. They need hedging instruments. They need a lot of liquidity, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, is crypto infrastructure ready for that?
So what's really interesting is that, for example, the CME, right, which is a recognized institution that people are comfortable with, that lists Bitcoin, Ethereum, futures and options. You know, it's great to see that institution has joined the crypto journey, you know, a couple of years ago now, right? Maybe even like 3 years ago. I think it was in December of 2017, was it?
I think it's 2017. Yeah.
Oh, 2018, maybe. In any case, it was, you know, more than 2 years ago. And that's really opened the door for a lot of institutions to come in and trade and hedge crypto. So I think that was a great start. The problem is that there are not that many prime brokers that allow these institutions to trade the crypto because they believe it's very volatile, and so the margin requirements are fairly high. And so it's kind of like still in a little bit of it's trading in a vacuum. You need to be in the midst as a mid-sized hedge fund to be able to trade pretty much everywhere, which is what, you know, trade on CME, trade on offshore exchanges to be able to sort of really take advantage of the space. So again, you know, I think as prime brokers come in, crypto native prime brokers come into the space, then you start unlocking a lot of these, a lot of this infrastructure that sort of hedge funds and institutions need to really conduct their business. Admins and auditors also need to come in. If you can't get your PwC or Deloitte or your Ernst & Young to be comfortable about what you're doing in crypto, you're not going to do it. Because you're not going to put it, at risk your book of business just to start something that may or may not work. It's too risky. So you need to have all your ducks in a row, and need to be able to, just stay credible. You have reputational risk, and so I think again, these things will take time. Are we better off today than we were even last year? Yeah, of course. The trend is clear. We're going in the right direction. And again, in 10 years, it'll be a completely different landscape.
To build up on the question, because you talk a lot about regulated centralized products, more or less. What about the more degen side of things, where, for example, these institutions could perhaps start using Aave V2. I know they already have an institutional version, basically using DeFi protocols directly. Do you ever see a future like that?
Yeah, I do. I think the question now, especially nowadays with sanctions and knowing your customer and you have to know who you're facing. So to the degree that you can use technology in a way that sort of fits compliance, and I'm not saying that's the right approach, because I think technology can change approaches, right, in compliance. And instead of trying to fit it back into the old way of compliance, maybe there's a new way of being compliant. But in any case, these things move slowly. And I think, one day, Citibank and Deutsche will be using Aave, Curve, or any of these sort of protocols? I do believe so, absolutely. No reason why not. It'll just have to be set in a way that they're comfortable with the processes, right? The compliance and the operational guidelines that they just have to comply.
Hey, Rick, thank you for sharing. Last question for the session. It's been a very eventful year so far, to say the least. Mm-hmm. What are XBTO's plans for 2022?
Well, we've got some really cool products coming. We'll be releasing very soon, in a couple of weeks, one of our products that we've been designing in the last 3 months, 3 to 6 months. And it's something that has to do with utilizing Bitcoin and bringing more utility to Bitcoin. For everyday folks, and I think that'll resonate well with people and even corporates. We want to continue working on things like prime brokerage and lending and borrowing in general. I think we're going to be developing a lot of products for people who want basically market neutral exposure to the market. And that's through more of a hedge fund structure. That's certainly what's coming in 2022 for XBTO. Not to, release too many details, but I think, in the next couple of weeks, we'll know more.
Great. I think that's all for today. Before we end the session, are there anything else you'd like to share to our audience? Maybe something about XBTO? Anything you'd like to share at all?
Well, thanks for having me. XBTO has been in this journey for 7 years, and we were here yesterday, and we're going to be here tomorrow. I mean, that's really what we're growing with the space, and we're nimble and agile, and we want to grow with institutions and crypto native players alike, right? So, people can follow me on at Philippe Beck on Twitter or at XBTO Group for the greater group. And thanks for having me. And till next time.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on. Take care.
All right, that wraps up the show. Thank you for listening to the CoinGecko podcast with Bobby. If you like our show and want to know more, check out podcast.coingecko.com. Or please leave us a review on iTunes. If you have any feedback, do drop us an email at hello@coingecko.com. Join us for more next week. See ya!
This podcast is provided as part of the overall information on cryptocurrency contained on our website, is for your general information only, and does not howsoever constitute any endorsement, financial or investment advice, nor any solicitation or offer of securities or other financial instruments. CoinGecko and the podcast presenter makes no warranties, implied or express, of any kind in relation to this podcast, including, without limitation, the accuracy and updatedness of its content. All opinions and recommendations therein the podcast are based on the personal opinion of the presenter. Please conduct your own research and procure professional advice should you, at your own risk, decide to howsoever invest or trade in relation to the content contained in the podcast.